Welcome to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. This weekend, more than 300 people showed up to take part in the March for Our Lives in downtown Sioux City. The group marched from the Tyson Events Center to the Sioux City Public Museum, an 11-minute journey which was meant to symbolize the 11 minutes that the recent gunman in Parkland, Florida spent shooting and killing his classmates and teachers on February 14th. It was a cold, windy, wet day, so the group moved into the biggest space possible at the museum. Once there, the group sang the national anthem, led by two young people.
Bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
One of the event organizers, Sarah Hoffer, thanked the crowd for coming. Hoffer said she was amazed at the number of people that came out.
When I first applied for the permit for us to do this, there was a comment mentioned to me that didn't really strike me as odd. They asked how many people I thought would show up. I said, I don't know, could be 10, could be 100, I'm not sure. And the comment was, well, it's Sioux City, so don't expect too much.
Hoffer then talked about why she wanted to have this march in the first place. Hoffer said she remembered the tragedy of the Columbine shooting back in the 1990s.
Well, 19 years later, and 187,000 students have now been exposed firsthand to gun violence while in their school. That's greater than our population. That's a number that I can't really wrap my head around.
Hoffer then looked around the room and acknowledged that the marchers probably took part for a variety of reasons.
I know that some of you are here today with the opinion of pushing for gun control. Some of you are here today with the opinion of pushing for armed staffs in our school. Some of you are here today with the opinion of pushing for bullying prevention. Some of you are here today with the opinion of bringing more awareness to mental health. I'll tell you, I'm personally here because I don't feel that our schools are secure enough in keeping the threats out. But you know what, Sioux City? No matter what your opinion is, you're here today. We are all here today. We are joining hundreds of thousands of our fellow human beings over 800 cities on 6 continents today.
Several students from the Sioux City schools spoke out about how they felt knowing that gun violence is still such a big problem in American schools. Langston Saint is 10 years old. He attends Les Hills Elementary School. Langston said he was worried about the many aspects of guns in schools, and mostly he's just afraid.
Knowing that a shooter could strike my school and possibly kill me, my classmates, and my teachers. Between 2000 and 2009, there were 63 school shootings and 107 people killed in them. Since 2010, there have been 151 school shootings and 164 people killed in them. That's 88 more shootings and 57 more people killed, and the decade is not over yet.
Langston went on to talk about proposals to arm teachers and other school personnel to take action when there is a shooting.
Some school shootings are caused by teachers, such as the one at the University of Alabama, where my parents went to school. But even if we know that this person is someone we can trust, even if they had the greatest intentions at heart, even if they have the best character, we still might not be able to trust them with a gun. Even policemen, with years of training, sometimes misuse their weapons and kill innocent people. If we sometimes can't trust certain trained and certified police officers, can we trust teachers in our schools with little to no training?
Next, a North High School student talked about her feelings and fears surrounding gun violence at school. Elise Sturgeon is 18 years old, and she's a senior at North High School. Elise said the tragedy in Parkland, Florida, should never have been allowed to happen in the first place.
These students and staff died on Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday, 2 days that call for love and peace. But instead, they went to school only to be confronted by a boy with a gun and evil intentions. This tragedy that very well could have been prevented took away any peace in Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School that devastating day.
Elise went on to talk about the people who died in that shooting and how it's affected all American students.
Children should not have to sacrifice their lives for others. Students should not have to think about the possibility of dying in their schools. Kids shouldn't have to jump every time they hear a loud noise because they fear for their lives. Students of America should never have to fear for their lives in order to obtain an education. We didn't sign up for this. Campuses shouldn't be viewed as potential war zones. So why are we allowing military-grade weapons to fall into the hands of children?
Elise said the day after the shooting, she went around and asked several teachers what their plan was in case a shooter got into the school.
Many told us that their plan was to hide in a corner. Another told me that they had a hammer to break out a window and a bunch of golf balls to throw. One teacher was brutally honest and admitted that if there was someone with an AR-15 in our schools, we were screwed. The same teacher also said that if it came down to it, she would throw herself in front of a gun to save one of her students' lives. My teachers should not have to contemplate whether they would sacrifice their own lives for their students. That is not in any teaching contract. Teachers should worry about giving us the information we need to be successful, thriving adults. Teachers should be planning after-school programs, not planning to hand over their lives.
Next, Kaylin Roberts, a political science major at Morningside College in Sioux City, encouraged Sioux Citians to get politically active to try and change the laws that she says are allowing gun violence in schools.
If you are eligible, register to vote and actually do it. Be an informed voter so you can go to the polls with confidence, knowing that you are supporting candidates who maintain your ideals and who will initiate change through policy to help alleviate this epidemic. Your vote counts and is an incredibly powerful way to make a difference. Even if you can't vote, you can still have major influential power over your representatives. We all wield this power. Here in Iowa, we have 5 people representing us in the United States Congress. Learn about their stances on policy and what they've done to help stop this epidemic of school shootings, or what they haven't done.
Morningside College Associate Professor of Political Science Valerie Henning came to the podium and talked about her experiences with college students and for whom gun violence in the last 20 years has affected how they see the world.
Virginia Tech happened 11 years ago. This is the 19th anniversary of Columbine. But when I think about my students and the students in this room and across this nation, the mass shooting generation is not who they are. That describes the world that we've given them. That describes the promises we've broken. My students are the change generation, and I think we heard that. So as we consider, you know, the various policies that will ultimately make our communities safe, I just want to echo the things that we heard each of them say. You know, remember that this march, this is not the end, this is the beginning.
The marchers dispersed soon after that, many of them saying they would gladly take to the streets again to deal with the circumstances that allow gun violence in schools. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Last month, The Exchange hosted a live show in Orange City to talk about the recent controversy over some LGBTQ children's books in the public library. At the time, the board had not yet decided whether to yield to requests that the books be removed or recategorized. At their monthly meeting last week, the Orange City Public Library Board decided to reorganize books by subject so patrons would have a better idea about the content of the books. Amanda Vasquez is the director of the Orange City Public Library. She couldn't comment on the controversy, but she did explain how the new book organization system might work. How is this different than the way you've been doing it?
Well, right now our fiction collections are organized by author last name. So if you walk into our kids section, all of our picture books are just by author last name, and that is the way that we organize them. So everything by Jan Brett is all together, which is, you know, comes before all the James Dean, Pete the Cat books. So that's just the system that we have right now. This new BISAC system that we're going to be test running would have us reorganize materials by what they're about. So in the juvenile fiction section, some of the headings that have been created by this book industry group, which actually is the one who's created this kind of framework, I guess might be the best word for it. It might be juvenile fiction, animals, dogs. So all of our books that are about dogs would be together, and then within that dogs section, they'd be, again, alphabetical by author. And then, you know, maybe all of our pirate books would be together, and all of our books about the alphabet would be together under concepts. So it would be less about who the author is and more about what the book is about.
Is that a big task to change that system?
It would require that we change the computer records for all of our titles and reassign call numbers and print new labels. So right now, it might say F for fiction, K2 for our picture book section, and then the author's last name. But the new labels would say, possibly, juvenile fiction, animals, dogs. So we'd have to put new stickers on all of our materials, change the computer records, like I said, and then physically rearrange all of those materials. And we would also be installing some additional signage to indicate where different areas, where different subjects are.
When I talked to some people from the Library Association, both in Iowa and nationally, they said it's not unusual to have this kind of a system in a library.
Right. It's actually a system that I've been aware of for quite a few years. It just is a really large task. I've actually spoken to a couple of libraries in Iowa who have moved to a similar system, and there's actually another library that I'm a little more familiar with that's currently undergoing the transition from a more traditional Dewey system to the BISAC bookstore model system. We're going to do a handful of sections and try to have those ready by the summer when we have a huge influx of people in the library for all of our programs and activities, and we're going to take patron and user feedback on how they like the system compared to the old system. We're also going to be looking at the statistics of those materials in comparison to the materials that are shelved in our current system. And we can see whether those materials are getting more use, if patrons really like it, because it's easy to go and find, you know, well, my kid really wants to read about trucks all the time. So we know where the truck system, we know where the truck section is now, so we can just go and find all those. So like I said, we're going to test run it with a few sections and then see how the comments come back to the library and how the statistics bear out whether it's a good idea for the rest of the children's section and potentially for the rest of the library.
That was Amanda Vasquez, the director of the Orange City Public Library. The library board has decided to try a new categorization system that would arrange books by topic after last month's controversy over some LGBTQ books that some in the community wanted to see removed. The library will keep one of the books in question, called Morris Micklewhite and the Tangerine Dress, about a little boy that occasionally likes to put on dresses. Steve Marr is the owner of the Town Square Coffee House in Orange City. He was one of the community members that wanted to keep those books. I asked him about the library's decision and about an upcoming event aimed at 4th District Republican Steve King that takes place tomorrow night. When I spoke to Marr, the controversy over King's comments about a teenage girl who was taking part in a walkout over gun violence in schools hadn't occurred yet. King made some comments about her wearing a T-shirt that featured the Cuban flag, a flag that comes from a communist country. But concerning the books, Marr says he is satisfied with the Orange City Public Library's decision.
You know, I'm really proud of the Orange City Library board and of the director. I think that they've kept a really level heads. They've done a really professional and a job, and stayed really civil, opening up the conversation to the public and then taking those comments and trying to find a workable solution within the law. And so I think one of the things that they heard at the meeting was that parents would like more transparency. They want to know what their kids are checking out and able to regulate that as parents. So the system that they're looking at doing is called BISAC. It's BISAC, all caps. It's a commercial cataloging system that's an alternative to the Dewey system. I think the Lamar's Public Library is implementing that system right now. They're looking at the possibility of using that specifically in the children's section, that K through 2 section. Like you said, they're going to do a trial run of a couple of categories to see if that's something that parents find useful. I think in a children's section like that, as a father of 4 kids, it could be great to have books separated by topic. I don't think it's going to do much to appease folks who are frustrated about the books, because the books aren't going to be specifically labeled as LGBTQ books. They fall under a predetermined category already. The library isn't picking those categories. It's like I said, it's the BISAC system that picks those categories. So I think it's fine. I don't think it's going to appease the people who are frustrated. I'm not certain if there is something legally that would appease them. I think that the library is in a tough spot, and they've done a good job at remaining a public institution that's for the public.
Well, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about what you guys are going to be doing on Thursday.
So we're going to have an assembly prior to the Sioux County Conservative Pizza and Policy event at the Sioux Center Library. Steve King is their guest speaker. And he's, you know, the representative of District 4 in the U.S. House. And so he doesn't come to District 4 very often. And we wanted to take the opportunity to make sure that we could get people together and speak to what we see as a broader community core values that are not represented well in his rhetoric and in the way he presents himself as our representative in the public. So it's a gathering of people. We're going to have 3 or 4 community members speak, and we've invited all the candidates who are running against Steve King in the next election to come speak, including Cindy Hansen, who is challenging Steve King in the primary. So it'll be about 30 minutes from 6 to 6:30, and each person will speak for about 3 to 4 minutes, and we'll wrap it up and then head in together to attend the event together.
Well, I know that the pizza and policy meeting, that doesn't begin till 7, is that right?
The plan, because we want to make sure that we're able to attend the meeting, is to gather and invite media so that our message gets out there and make sure that we are able to communicate that it's not just a small amount of people that believe this. At the last time we had an assembly, over 200 people showed up. So I think our hope is that there's a good crowd of people who say, yeah, I mean, we might be conservative and we have maybe historically voted Republican, but Steve King doesn't represent what we believe well. And we want to hold him accountable and then head in to the meeting and hopefully have an opportunity to do that in a smaller way. I'm not sure the format of the Sioux County Conservative meeting in order to make sure that certain people have an opportunity to speak. We decided to have the assembly ahead of time and then file in.
So is the public welcome to the Sioux County Conservative meeting?
They are, yep.
But have you been to one before?
Yes, yep.
So how was it? I mean, it seems like your values are pretty much opposed, but
it's their event, right? And they have the opportunity to present the ideas that they want to present. I think oftentimes, you know, like when you get a group of people together and everyone thinks the same thing, and then you get people into a room together and maybe they're like strong opposition, it's not necessarily the best place to have the conflict. Do you know what I mean? And so I think for Sioux County conservatives to have a space where they talk about and encourage the ideologies that they believe in. And so to attend regularly an event like that, I don't think there's a lot of value for me to do that. They want to promote their ideas and in their own space, and they should be allowed to do that. But this event to me is different because it's not, you know, a specific speaker on a specific topic speaking to Sioux County conservatives. It's somebody who's called to represent our entire district as a government elected official. And so for me, the wider community should come and challenge King, not specifically Sioux County conservatives' existence or to challenge King and the way he's been representing us.
That was Steve Marr, the owner of the Town Square Coffee House in Orange City. He and other community members are gathering tomorrow evening in front of the Sioux Center Public Library to talk about their issues with 4th District Republican Congressman Steve King. Political differences in Iowa are nothing new. 100 years ago, those differences sometimes had to do with the then contentious issue of giving American women the right to vote. This is the last week of March, which is Women's History Month. Morningside College Assistant Professor of History, Kitty Green, teaches American history from colonization to the present, courses concentrating in the world wars of the 20th century and women's history. Green shared some of that history Sunday at the Sioux City Public Museum. She talked about the suffrage movement in Sioux City in 1916, when the state had a referendum on the ballot about women's suffrage. Green said there was a lot of support for the measure among the city's society women and their clubs, but there were also women who were resolutely against giving themselves the vote.
But they were up against a community where that did not represent the majority of people. They're more of a socially prominent group, but they're not the majority of people in Sioux City.
So when Carrie Chapman Catt came here to sort of push this referendum, what happened?
Well, I thought the newspaper was kind of prejudiced. You know, when I read the paper, I was kind of commenting about the kind of editorial comment the journal would make, like militant. They would kind of characterize her in not a very positive fashion. Even that she was well received by a lot of people in town, you always got that kind of undercurrent that they didn't like her being here.
Somebody mentioned who was here at the presentation. He thought maybe the loss of this referendum here made Carrie Chapman Catt realize that she needed to have a national referendum. Did that have any part in it, do you think?
I think by 1916, by the time Carrie Chapman Catt came to Sioux City, Iowa, she had been working at this for 20 years with only limited success. And I think after this frustrating campaign in 1916, I think she'd had enough. It's time to reevaluate whatever political strategy we're following. And there's evidence that she went shortly after this campaign to Atlantic City, New Jersey, in 1916. There was a group of them gathered, and they came up with the famous winning plan, which finally pushed through the national suffrage amendment.
But that really couldn't happen until after the World War I ended, right?
World War I really helped. It was one of those kinds of things that giving women suffrage came kind of tied into the war effort. It was kind of women kind of proved themselves as good citizens. And it's interesting to note Carrie Chapman Catt particularly, and the women in her organization supported America's entry into World War I. Some of the suffragists didn't.
Were they concerned it would take away from their cause?
No, you mean the ones who supported it?
Yes.
They thought it would gain them help. People who act patriotically and work hard during a war effort always think they'll be rewarded. Like black soldiers think they'll be rewarded if they go and fight in World War I. They think they'll be rewarded. The people will finally recognize that they ought to have full rights as citizens. I think women thought the same way. If we support the war effort, people will understand we're ready to vote.
And it seemed to have helped them.
It did help. It brought Wilson around. Woodrow Wilson eventually ended up supporting a woman suffrage.
You also talked about the nativist element in this particular issue, talking about how so many of the bars were owned by, say, you know, German and Irish people, a lot of them Catholic, and then there was the opposing side.
Yeah, what anti-immigrant feeling existed, these campaigns made it worse. Because the voting results clearly indicated that they did not support women suffrage. So, of course, the women supporting suffrage blamed them many times for the defeat.
They held a lot of power.
Who did? The saloon interest? Yes, they had a lot of power in a town like this. So it would be hard to overcome it. But again, in Sioux City, I don't think nearly as bad as it was in eastern Iowa, but there was indications of voter fraud. Not nearly as much here as other places, but there was always some allegations that there had been some tampering with the voting.
Why do you think it is a lot of us just don't know anything about this particular history, or we've sort of heard of it, but we never really were taught actually in school anything about local history when I was a kid? Maybe it's different now.
Do you know how much trouble it was to put this paper together? I can tell you why people don't know about it. You have to sit around and read newspapers for months, because it's very hard to piece together these stories, because a lot of research in Sioux City history has not been done. When I teach at Morningside College, I tell students that they want a research project. Why don't you do local history? Because very few people have done things like the 1916 referendum campaign. They don't dig into these local issues. They all want to write about something national.
A lot of really interesting things happened here. You were talking about Mary Safford, who was a female minister, the Unitarian minister, at a time when you really didn't have female ministers.
You know, and yes, and one of the things that's interesting, I pointed out in the beginning, in 1916, Sioux City was the second largest city in Iowa. So we, in 1916, were more prominent than we are today. Today we are no longer the largest city, or the second or third or fourth in Iowa. So our status in terms of providing leadership was much greater in 1916 than it tends to be today.
Do you think a lot of these elements are still with us today? You know, the sort of the tribal interests of the Protestants and the Catholics, and now we have a lot of people who are new to Iowa, just like they had 100 years ago.
It's a little different because most of the immigrants at this particular time were from Europe. So I would argue most of the resentment was their religion. So I would argue in 1916, yes, it was about their religion. Now it takes on from different places now. I just want people who are involved in understanding moving people's rights forward, that it's a long, tough struggle, and it's never been easy. So a lot of people always think the battle's been won. And I like when you read these things or talk about these campaigns. They're hard fought. Takes years sometimes, but you will prevail if you stick with it.
That was Kitty Green, assistant professor of history at Morningside College, talking about the women's suffrage movement in Sioux City in 1916, when the state was considering a referendum on the ballot that